What I dislike about networking, to be honest, is one, people trying to sell to you.
Yeah.
That is the first thing in business. It's to earn that trust.
Check your blind spots and help you discover things and, you know, see different perspectives that you might have missed.
As a founder, you are sometimes very lonely. You're on this journey and driving things yourself, and you need to be HR and finance and CEO and ops and everything.
Sometimes you're going to give and not take, and that's fine. We have had instances where there's been evident takers and it's just not the right fit.
Before we start this podcast, I've got one little favor to ask you. Can you please hit the subscribe button down below so we can help more people every single week? Thank you. Welcome to the Right Place podcast, where we learn with you how to build connections that matter, relationships that last, and businesses that thrive. My name is Rudolf Rotenbach, and today I'm talking to Ryan Osher. Well, you must maybe let me know how to say your surname, Ryan, from Civitas. Ryan, nice to chat to you.
Likewise, Rudolf. Thanks for hosting me.
Yeah, so you're not going to bail me out now that surname is pronounced properly.
Osher, you got it right the second time.
Second time round, I apologize for that. I should have asked in advance. Ryan, we met some time ago at the one of the conferences there in Sandton City. And I was quite taken to the fact that I spoke to someone at Civitas. I knew about it through a mutual connection and then didn't realize that it's you that I'm talking to. I just started talking to someone from Civitas. So tell me a little bit about Civitas. Why did you start it? What's the goal there?
Yeah, sure. So thanks for that. So Civitas is a private network for high growth founders and CEOs. We're currently working with approximately 370 members, all operating high growth businesses. And a lot of what we've built, or everything we've built for that matter, has been off a lot of the data and research that shows belonging to a top network dramatically increases your odds of success. So you look at organizations like YPO globally, I think about 80% of their members will attribute their success in business to actually belonging to that network. So we've really developed a similar type of setup with a number of differences, predominantly or founded in South Africa, predominantly operational within the country as well. We do, however, have a partner in Mauritius who's looking at activating the global markets. And really part of our long-term growth strategy is to set up these city-based chapters around the globe. And really what we do in essence is bring founders together and help them connect and learn from one another. So, you know, it's much easier climbing a mountain when you have some friends with you, a Sherpa, a GPS, as opposed to doing it alone. And whilst it's easier, it's also funner, but you get to learn from the mistakes of others, but you also get to be inspired by others. So through a number of online and virtual events and WhatsApp groups, you know, we really just provide a platform for people to meet like-minded individuals and just share learnings and collaborate on a consistent basis.
That's very cool. So a few things. The first one is that I take out of it is a little bit, can I say, elitist, although it's not necessarily your big corporates, but it's this exclusivity. It's probably a better word. And then the second thing that I want to quickly touch on is you spoke about founders and not necessarily CEOs. Is there a distinguishing thing between the two for you, or is it necessarily that you have to start the business and not just run and manage the business?
Yeah. So I'll start with the second question. Is we work with both founders and appointed CEOs. Predominantly founders, and we find a lot of our members, you know, even if they are founders and CEOs of their business, they actually identify themselves as founders as opposed to CEOs. We obviously do stick away from your corporatized sector, really working with businesses predominantly between about 5 million and a couple hundred million in revenue. And so we don't necessarily qualify on only one of those titles. We do find often there is more of an investment from the founder when it comes to, you know, growing the business, purely because they are not salaried employees. They've got skin in the game and they've generally been in it for a period of time and had a lot of investment, whether that's time and money that they've actually put in to getting it up to that level. But both are welcome. When it comes to, I wouldn't say we're elitist. You know, we actually try and differentiate ourselves from the culture that we've built. which is really like shorts and t-shirt, but high-level professionals there to not sell to one another, but actually add value to one another. But, you know, part of the original motive behind Civitas was to also try to do our bits to try and change the country and put the country on a trajectory that would ultimately get it to a point where it could be competing globally and solve a lot of the unemployment challenges that exist. And what we believe that in the quickest way to actually do that is to work with really strong founders that have higher chances of success. And by virtue of that, they're going to be building bigger businesses quicker and hiring a lot more people. So there are a lot of players within South Africa too, a lot of incubators, accelerators, they're corporate funded, playing in the space of really the grassroots entrepreneurs. But, you know, we just feel that it was better for us to start with a slightly more mature individual. And we are a membership-driven platform. You know, we're a for-profit organization, which does come with membership fees. And while they might be more palatable than some of the other organizations, it also does require a certain element of, you know, funding power or purchasing power in order to belong to us. So the culture we've tried to build is, again, it's not elitist, it's non-egotistical, really nice people, which is a key qualification of joining. But yeah, I think, you know what, you've got to pick a segment of the market and go after it. And that's the one we went after.
Oh, very good. Yeah, the elitist came out before I got the right word, but I think the exclusivity is really what the guys are looking for. If you look at deriving value out of this, because obviously you create networking events, you have the ability for people to talk to each other and to learn from each other, but also to, as you say, give value to each other. How do you derive value from a networking event, or specifically then from Civitas's networking events and belonging to this club or this organization? How is value given and received?
Yeah. So I think the first thing, and even from your prior point, you know, a lot of the value within these offerings is who you're surrounding yourself with. And I was very involved in the startup scene, if you want to call it, in South Africa for a while. And what I found tended to happen was a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs started to attend, and a lot of the more established entrepreneurs stopped attending. And it became really difficult to actually engage with people more or less at your level, that there was a really strong value exchange relationship between everyone. So, you know, I, a lot of the time will refer, I don't really refer to us as a networking organization. I think a byproduct of what we do is we bring people together, i.e. networking. But we do have this consistent connect and learn theme, right? And whether it's a online event, whether it's an in-person breakfast or a fireside chat that we're hosting, we actually want you to ensure that when you're going to be meeting people that aren't there to sell to you, they're actually there to be curious about you, build the relationship, build rapport with one another. But there's an opportunity to walk away with learnings that you could directly implement into your business. So whether it's from a speaker, whether it's from just a roundtable discussion with other founders, we try and present topics, questions, and themes of evenings that are, one, very relatable, two, very, very much in existence for most businesses, and ultimately, you know, prompts a discussion whereby members can just experience share with one another, and you actually leave feeling inspired, but, you know, action ready to do something different in your business thereafter.
You mentioned some events and the fireside chats and all the likes and online stuff as well. And how do you enable the members then to support each other in these processes? Because it doesn't necessarily all come from you. I assume that the guys would go and identify a need somewhere and they try to help or tell their story, I suppose. So how is that functionally working?
So look, we've got a quite a vast number of different types of events that we host. And I think in essence, what we are is a peer-to-peer learning organization. So there's a lot of peer-to-peer experience share that does take place. But how we typically facilitate this is at every one of our events, there's an opportunity to really present yourself and your business to everyone around the table, just for them to know who you are and what you do. And the same goes for all of our events, right? But in essence, The types of events that we host are not necessarily one way. They've all been designed to be interactive. So even our online sessions, they're not webinars. There's maybe a 15-minute, presentation or slide deck that's covered by the respective speaker. But there afterwards, majority of the time is spent in Q&A. So the idea is that you're actually getting to learn from the questions and challenges that other members are facing. And a lot of the time, what we actually find is by someone asking the right question around the challenge that they're facing could prompt an idea or an insight for yourself that you've never previously considered in your own organization. So I think the one element we've tried to adopt is, high levels of interaction across our sessions. We have a number of other types of events, which, we call meetups. And these are either things like sharing of growth tactics or sharing of business operating frameworks or systems in your business. Or it's just a matter of getting software developers together and letting them share some of the common problems that they're facing. So most of what we do, pretty much all of what we do, is facilitated. But it's really there by design for members to bring forward questions or issues that they're facing and use that as a prompt for others to help. Same goes for our breakfasts. So, everything that we do encourages this opportunity to really meet more people, learn from more people, and actually just continuously build new relationships.
Very good. You mentioned that you are from the startup space, and then you got tired of all these guys that are all startups and they can't help each other almost. But what is it that attracts you to, I want to call it networking, but this relationship building structures that you are facilitating, that you are driving? What is it that attracts you to that? And then just at the end, if you can tell me a little bit about what is the one thing in that you absolutely dislike? Because we all have those that you want to go to an event, you attend it, and it's all nice, but there's always something that irritates you. So I want to hear about that as well. But primarily, what is it that draws you to this? And obviously, you're making a living out of it now.
So I'll share from personal experience is, look, I was fortunate enough to grow up with a pretty strong and supportive network and community, which was amazingly, it was almost invaluable. And throughout my journey, what I often thought of is like, your odds are stacked against you building a business. Now try do it without having any support at all. Like your odds are even further stacked against you. So I had a taste of the value that this could offer and felt that like making this available to others would just be part of my contribution to growing businesses within the country or globally for that matter. But more so than that, a lot of my, I launched a business, for instance, in 2013, trying to get, it was a marketplace, trying to get suppliers on for free at that stage was a challenge because at that point in time, there was such a negative connotation around the internet that people thought that they were consistently going to get scammed. But I had a few other acquaintances, if you want to call them, that I came into contact with at different workspaces, and they were building businesses, similar types of businesses at the same point in time. And we could just speak to each other about problems that were highly relatable, that not other, that one wouldn't necessarily have the insight on if they hadn't been in that position. So really what I then looked at was a lot of the events that took place, but it would never really substitute the fact of having like a, not even a one-on-one, but having a constructive conversation with a group of people that know exactly what you're going through was unmatched compared to anything else that I got access to. So I looked for many years at how can you make this more consistent? Because, building a business is time consuming. One doesn't necessarily have the time to have frequent coffees. So often these conversations would happen ad hoc, that happen at one every second month, and then 4 months later, and then 2 months later, and then 6 months later. So there was no consistency around it. So I already looked for opportunity to almost just bring CEOs together to have these conversations. And then, to be honest, a number of years down the line, I've been involved in a number of different businesses, and all of them present their own unique challenges. But a number of years down the line, after doing a little bit of consulting into SMEs, I then, met my business partner, Paul Smith. And he had actually at that stage been working on the first version of the model before then. And after a conversation with him, it just felt like the penny dropped, and you know, it was something that I wanted to commit myself to and make more available to, you know, more founders. Also considering the fact that I love the consulting model, or I loved consulting, but not necessarily the consulting model for a number of reasons. So that's really what drew me into where I was at, personal experience around firsthand seeing the value that this could offer, and ultimately making this available en masse to a lot more members. What I dislike about networking, to be honest, is one, people trying to sell to you. You know, I know there are platforms out there where this is the intended purpose. It's not us. I think people want to build relationships. People want to be curious with one another. They don't necessarily want to meet you and feel like they need to buy from you or have to say no to you if they feel like they're being sold to. I also find that given the fact time is so scarce, giving up time, whether it's personal or business, to attend an event whereby you're not feeling like you're actually leaving with value or meeting with people that are enriching your life just becomes a massive opportunity cost to consider when thinking where you could actually be spending that time. The other is unintentional networking, you know, just getting people together for the sake of and hoping that they have small talk. You know, again, I think people land up diverting to a bunch of different topics. You know, I personally have a massive friends group and I can go have small talk all I want. You know, when it isn't my personal time or business time, I want to make sure that I'm actually building relationships or not even getting anything out of it, but adding value to people that I know would appreciate it without any expectation of where this might get to in the future.
Yeah, very interesting. I think I work along the same lines in that if someone comes with a hard sell, you almost close off. You don't want to entertain it further because we are so tired of being bombarded with these type of things that it would give the event a negative connotation as well. So how do you enable the culture? How do you get that right, that other people buy into this? Because it's obviously the way you intend for it to be. Is it like a set of rules, or is it something that you foster over a period of time? How does it work?
Yeah, so I think there's a few factors. One is we definitely have a set of values that members need to adopt. And one of them is a pay it forward mentality. So we do have a no direct selling rule. We don't mind members doing business together, but often it's done through relationship building mechanisms or value adding mechanisms, but not direct selling. The other is just, again, bringing in this pay it forward mentality where it's, you know what, sometimes you're going to give and not take, and that's fine. We have had instances where there's been evident takers and it's just not the right fit. And the other is, you know, just the communication style, as opposed to just telling people what they should be doing, rather like share experiences. So we definitely have those values in place to try and circumvent any direct selling. But I'd say, you know, a lot of the common feedback we get from members at events is people are really just curious to know more about one another. They're not there to sell. And I think in order to achieve that, you almost have to do a qualification around who you're letting in. And that goes back to the previous point around the exclusivity, where it really is suited to a certain type of individual. And one of the things that we do try to test for very early on within any conversation is like, what is your intended purpose of joining the network? If it's purely for sales, I can set the expectation up for you now that that's very unlikely and it's probably the wrong place to be. You know, if you're there to build relationships and learn from others, that I know we can deliver on. All that being said, we do have other ways that we give members exposure. So if it's a member that's a deep domain expert in a specific field, you know, we'd happily host an online session with them where they actually get to share some of their knowledge with members, add some value. And often what tends to happen is once you receive value from someone and you're able to connect with what they're saying, what they're trying to achieve, you then might actually be interested to hear more about them. So a lot of other passive ways in terms of how we give exposure to our members, because we do want to celebrate, you know, who belongs to the community. But ultimately, you know, we do have a set of rules. We are happy to, you know, we ask members to let us know if any other members they feel are breaking the rules. because if those rules/values are not in place, ultimately it will just damage member experience and people will leave. And but I think fortunately to date we've really had like one, two instances of that where we've dealt with it, you know, pretty much immediately. And fortunately, you know, it hasn't happened much at all.
I like the concept. I like the way that it works, because it works ultimately just on relationship. And I think that is that is the first thing in business. It's to earn that trust, to earn the respect of the other person, to give before you receive. And it's common life principles, but also very, very effective in business. And to go there almost without the expectation to receive something and to just impart. And I think sometimes a lot of people just talk. They just talk about themselves the whole time, and you'll go away and you feel almost empty because this person just spoiled your night.
100%.
I want to ask quickly, can you give us a quick success story of something that you know happened within the group, something that you feel proud of achieving because of members actually finding each other there?
Sure. Yeah, listen, I think it's a culmination of things, you know, because the way we see it is there's quantitative value and there's qualitative value. And there's been a lot of success stories on both fronts. I think without mentioning names or, you know, comprising any confidentiality, I mean, we've had members that had been running for a number of years, you know, doing a couple million in revenue. And through COVID came their pivotal point within their business where they were forced to make hard decisions. And through the, I guess, trusting relationships and insights from their former members and peers, they landed up pivoting the business and pretty much hit a billion rand in revenue about 2 years later. And ultimately, it comes down to the fact of, one, knowing that others are there to support you on the journey. Others are there to almost validate your thinking and sense check what you're doing. Others are there to check your blind spots and help you discover things and, you know, see different perspectives that you might have missed. But I think the big part about a lot of this as well is also the qualitative aspect. You know, running a business is hard. I mean, you will know. Yeah. It's hard. It comes with ups. It comes with downs. It's like there's never a linear emotional experience that comes with it. And a lot of the time, there's been situations where someone will come with like a really difficult issue. They'll present it to their group. And even if there isn't a direct answer, they will feel leaving so much more inspired and motivated and energized purely because they know, one, that they're not alone, like others are experiencing something similar, and others have maybe shared that, you know what, this too shall pass. So that's something that there may have not been like this dramatic shift happening immediately, but the sense of like grit factor doesn't necessarily wane, ultimately increases just because you're around people that are there to support you. So, I mean, we've had exceptional success of a lot of the members. You know, I think our average, the top 10% grew on average about 400% last year alone. So there's been like really some people like shooting the lights out completely. And, you know, I think for us, you know, we can only celebrate the fact that, you know, we're there to support them in some way, shape or form and contribute out a little bit to that. But ultimately, you know, it's really about measuring success in terms of revenue growth is important, measuring success in terms of how happy are you in your business, how much are you enjoying your business, and ultimately, you know, how are we also able to get people to build the foundations in their business, to allow them to play the role that they want to play, as opposed to having to, you know, feel like they're consistently in this grind of having to be the only person within their business pushing things forward.
Yeah, it's very important. And I think as a founder, you are sometimes very lonely. You're on this journey and driving things yourself, and you need to be HR, finance, and CEO, and ops, and everything. I think just to bounce these elements off other people that are potentially also experts in that field or that went through the same process could add a lot of value, not on actually effectively eradicating the problem, but just to know that you are not alone. I think that is something that that can't be understated. I think it's very important that we bind ourselves into a group somewhere, if it's not with you guys, somewhere that you can bounce ideas, but also just vent and speak your mind and know
100%.
that this other person's gone through that. It's also almost like a psychologist that you could just speak to, but it's someone of similar standing, and I quite like that of the network that you have.
Yeah,
Enzo, I'm
definitely.
happy
Listen,
to
I think
hear
we're big proponents. Like, join something, find your tribe, find people you can engage with.
Sorry.
We're one of them. I guess there's like a couple others out there, and I think the importance here is like just have a support network, have a network to tap into. It is important again that you are around the right people, because you want to be around people. What we found, people are inspired by seeing, being part of a group where others are like really excelling. They want to learn off them. They want to aspire to follow in their footsteps. But I think just the last point is, I think people are helping one another daily. So when we speak of success of support, I mean, we've got like communication channels and groups that go on all day. And whether it's someone needing like an urgent supplier to deal with like a massive mess that they're busy having to clean up, or someone that's run into a tricky problem and just wants to chat to someone around an expert on that particular subject matter around what they should be doing, like, these requests are consistently being put out, and other members are consistently responding to them. So it needs to be very much a just-in-time learning and just-in-time support ecosystem, because predictability is hard, and you never know what could be lying around the corner. And again, it's important to have a platform that you can tap into as and when you want. That just make that journey a little bit easier.
But then you can't speak to your wife always, and you can't speak to the other people in the business. So you need to find that sweet spot somewhere outside. So you're based in Joburg, so I assume the Joburg network is quite big, or that cluster. Are you also in Cape Town, other cities that you are currently in South Africa?
So we've got members nationally, Durban, Pretoria, George, Plets, Douglas, Hoopstad. So we've got members pretty much all over. The two primary chapters currently in Joburg in South Africa is Johannesburg, which is the biggest, followed by Cape Town. We've got a great partner running the chapter down there. But we are in that we've got a good number of members in Pretoria. So we're actually currently busy looking to launch our Pretoria chapter and our Durban chapter. So those are the next two cities within South Africa that we'll launch within. Again, currently, we've got different membership tiers, and one of them is a virtual offering, so members can join. We've got members pretty much across the world at the moment. But then we've got our location-specific chapters that have a lot more activity when it comes to in
Mentioned at the beginning something about Mauritius. What are the plans, and how are you going to drive this process into the rest of the world?
So look, it started. I mean, we're busy with our chapter launch model at the moment. We are speaking to a couple of different individuals in different global cities, but our partner, our international partner, is currently activating Portugal, Netherlands, and the UK. And listen, we are seeing there's been some really great responses and demand so far. We do have a number of members that have already joined. And the plan will be to eventually use the virtual membership as a precursor to actually launch those chapters globally. So there's quite a lot of movement on the go, and hopefully within the next sort of 6 to 12 months, we'll have a fair more number of chapters than we do currently. But there are, I think, with any scale, strategy, I think there are certain considerations to keep in mind, and scaling challenges to keep in mind. So we want to go, steady and slow, and give ourselves the best chance of success.
Very good. I thought of this question over the weekend to a mate of mine, and I want to throw it out to you quickly. In if you come to this event, so you arrange a breakfast, or you've got the physical session at night, or whatever it is, How do you, that first 2 3 minutes that you just arrive there as a member now, you're not you that's the boss there, but someone that just pitches up there. What is that one thing that you would tell him? This is paramount. This is what you have to do, or this is how you have to behave. What is that one thing that comes to your mind where you're in a room with strangers suddenly, and you need to almost present yourself in a way?
I would say two things. I'd say act with authenticity and be curious. I think
Wow.
those two things for me, I think like any good old sales coach would tell you, listen more than you speak.
Yeah.
And, if you're just curious, to be honest, for me, like my philosophy around sales and anything in general is, a sale for me is not a sale. It's a conversation around whether I can deliver value for you.
Yeah.
And, I would say, adopting that similar mindset, works. Asking people questions, let them ask you questions, and be curious.
That's very good. I intend one day with all the conversations that I am having around networking and so on, but to ask everyone to write 2 pages on that. So you'll be a contributor to that book one
Love
day.
to.
I'll send you the 2 pages to write on. I want to hear a bit about you. We've spoken about Civitas, we've spoken about what you guys do, and I've delved into your operations almost now. It feels like an interview. But you got the job, by the way.
Thank you.
But I want to understand your journey quickly, your personal journey. You mentioned about founders and your big network growing up and so on, but yeah, your business journey and how you got to where you are at the moment.
So I was one of those matriculants that stood at the university desk on the day of admissions deciding what he should study and decided to choose accounting because I guess that was the good job to choose. But I found myself through that journey, I guess, really not connecting with the long-term vision of where that could take me. That led me into a postgrad, which required a number of years service within financial services, and I just feel, intrinsically it didn't align with me and the journey that I wanted to embark on. So at that point in time, I started, so my dad had been in the importation game for many years. So I actually joined him for a little bit, which was super valuable. It allowed me to do a number of trips to China and see how the whole, just see how the global supply chain worked. And at that point in time, funnily enough, Eskom was offering rebates on a lot of the renewable energy products. So I started a business at that stage importing heat pumps into business. They were quite the thing then. And ran into a number of issues in that business on the service side. And I also then realized that having to deal with a service dynamic within a product-based business wasn't necessarily what excited me. So I spent a few years with my dad, which was really valuable because, working with him and managing a lot of the operations there, I really got to understand what it took to run a business. And he taught me a fortune of lessons that I could walk away with there afterwards. So following that, I moved into the tech space where I had a marketplace in the event sector, predominantly helping people and procurers just receive comparative quotes super quickly compared to the traditional means that came to managing a bunch of different aspects to event coordination and management. And a lot of school fees, I guess, learnt at that point in time. Timing in the market was super hard, as I mentioned earlier. There was such a negative outlook on the internet when it came to scams and being trusted that, it took some time to get right. Unfortunately, that business got into a really bad partnership, which, just resulted in me making some hard decisions, and I decided to take a step back. I then, during that sort of like breathe off period, did a stint at a business down in Cape Town. It was doing something very similar to what I was, but operating on the global markets. Didn't last long there either. I think I had very strong views about the role that I was in, which were quite conflicting to leadership. So we decided that yeah, it wasn't the best fit. And then from then on, I'd been in distribution. We had a couple of consumer good products that we had some distribution rights for in South Africa. I was doing some consulting at that point in time, and then met my business partner soon thereafterwards. And I guess for almost the last 6 years, Civitas has been the full time gig.
So it's what you do day in, day out. No other business, not full time
Day in,
at
day
least. Then.
out. No, this is full time, eh? This is full time. If there were more hours in a day, they would get utilized. Yeah, listen, we've got big ambitions. I think this isn't a side project for us. I think going back to a lot of the events that I used to attend, to be honest, a lot of them were side gigs for people. And I think it was one of the reasons that it never really got to a stage that they could have potentially been, because they were just done on an ad hoc basis, which I think was also one of the driving forces for me. Knowing the possibility of what it could be, but never was for others, really just served as a motivator to get it to a point that we want to. But again, we've got some really, really big plans. We want to be operating in thousands of cities over the next 5, 10 years. There's a lot that we want to do. We've come a long way in the journey, but we still got a long way we want to get to, and we're very much an improvement focused business, so we hold ourselves up to high standards. And big results don't come without hard work.
And I quite like this last part of the conversation now, saying that singular focus, that drive to service, and I'm all in here, I'm doing this obviously for myself. It's a business. I hear you saying business, it's a for profit, it's not a charity. But you have that focus to make this work, and because you all in, the members can rely on the fact that it's going to be a quality thing. It's going to be something that they can benefit from. So I think there's good value in just that. You're not running it as an aside for just entertainment purposes.
Listen, we're a month-to-month model, so what that means, and we are for profit, what that means is people pay us if we add value, and if we stop adding value, people leave. Which we feel also aligns interests. We want to build this. We want to invest in product development. We want to invest in the right things that's ultimately going to give our members more value and a better experience. And we're growing with them. We walk in the journey with them in the end of the day. We've got to practice what we preach too.
We normally end this conversation with this one question because the show's name is The Right Place. And we always ask a guest, are you currently in the right place? I think I know the answer, but I would like to know why as well.
Yeah, I think we are. Listen, from a business context, for sure, I think we're at the right place. We've had some really good results, tracking against our targets. That being said, everyone wants to be further ahead. But one lesson that I've learned through my journey is it's not always being about further ahead, it's about being prepared for that next stage of the journey. So very much where we are at the moment is getting our housekeeping in order, asking ourselves the hard questions around what we could or should be doing differently. Building the right team around us that's ultimately going to help support us to get there. So are we at the right place? Yes. I do believe every moment is there for a reason. Just act consciously, act strategically, and you'll get to where you want to. So hopefully it continues on the trend that we aspire to be on. But I'm certainly grateful as well for where we've at the moment, and grateful for a lot of our members, that have also entrusted us on the journey.
Yeah, so if I hear you correctly, you are at the right place with what you want to do, but you're not the finished
Absolutely.
product. It's still going somewhere. And that's always good because you have to have that ambition, that growth mindset as well.
Listen, personally, I mean, me and my business partner often chat about it. Since Civitas, we've just built the most incredible network, bigger, more powerful network than we've built through all the former years. We've learned the most that we've ever learned, more than all the former years. So I think just surrounding yourself around smart people, learning off them, again, just presents a really, unique opportunity for personal growth. So, and just me personally, I love it. You know, I think love help seeing or love help, you know, providing a platform to help people succeed. Love seeing people succeed, and the more people that we can, you know, positively influence and positively impact. Oh man, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, Ryan, thanks for your time, and I appreciate you taking the time out. I hope that Civitas goes from strength to strength. I think there's real good value. And as we said before we started recording, I actually know a bunch of people just from photos that I've seen on LinkedIn and on your banners and so on, a bunch of people that are part, and they're all very, very positive about what happens there. So it must be good if they say so. But yeah, thanks as well for the work that you guys do, and I hope that your dreams, your aspirations of growing it internationally, as well as just expanding the results, the impact it has. I hope that all that works out well. And yeah, thanks again for joining us here today.
No, thanks for the invite, Rudolph, and thanks for the chat. Yeah, it's been great.
Good, thanks. And to everyone else, we'll see you again next time at the right place. Goodbye.